We need different approaches because, to your point earlier, depending on where someone is in their own journey or what's at stake for them, you know, usually people come to me when it's on fire. And my approach is helpful in that context because it's about results and it's about, you know, rigorous thinking. And it's not about comfort. It's about you better turn this ship around tomorrow. Like, you got to go have that tough conversation today. I would invite you not to care how you feel about it right now. You can feel about it later. Now it's all about taking appropriate action.
My guest today is Adrian Kaler. Adrian is a leadership engagement expert and senior partner at the executive coaching firm Take New Ground in Los Angeles, California. Currently, he coaches executives and entrepreneurs in the art and science of leadership. And we are going to dig into the art side. And I'm curious to hear how he frames his art, how he approaches this as an art. And you're going to hear about the diverse background that he has coming into this from philanthropy, ministry, activism, and medicine. And it has really shaped a viewpoint in leadership that is really having impact on his clients. So we're going to talk about that and unpack that. We're going to hear about programs that he does, and I'm going to ask him about this cool term, hugging the cactus. I hope you'll join us. Well, hello, Evolve listeners and viewers. Welcome to another episode of Evolve, a new era of leadership. And I'm really excited to get into this conversation with our guest today, Adrian Kaler. Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Carolyn. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we met several weeks ago via, we had a sort of an intro call together, and we got into some really deep topics really fast. So I've been looking forward to this because
Tis the trend with people like us.
Exactly.
Like, hey, can we cut through all the where do you live conversation?
Exactly.
What are you about? Yeah. What's going on in there?
Exactly. And you know, when people can go there really quickly, I mean, it was really cool. And so I thought it'd be great to have you on the show, and heads up to those of you listening. We're going to dig into some topics and really invite you all to consider elements of yourself that perhaps you haven't considered examining. Maybe you haven't considered the impact that it has on how you lead, but that's where we're going to go. So Adrian, I want to start off, you know, I shared in the bio, you have a pretty rich background and you've seen a lot of different sides of human resilience and vulnerability. And I'm curious how that diverse experience has shaped your understanding of leadership.
Yeah, well, just a bit. I'll do some bullet points on my background just to catch listeners up. So I, you know, grew up in a small town, Southern Illinois. Parents are both school teachers. Didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. Went on to college, played sports in college, football player. Was like a pre-med guy. Decided not to go the doctor route. Did not have the stomach for that much school. And honestly, not that analytical. Like I like data. I just don't get off on data, and I couldn't like go do research for a long time. That's not interesting. That's not as interesting to me as human beings. So I like being closer to the front lines. And so anyway, serendipitously had a roommate in college who was a nursing major, never ever considered that. But when I was not going to do, you know, doctor, I'm like, oh, this is kind of Dr. Light. That's fun. And his dad ran the ER in Gary, Indiana. So pretty intense, pretty crazy, cool dude. I'd never met any male nurses before. And so anyway, got a nursing degree, moved to Chicago because I was dating a girl, you know, the story, dating a girl in Chicago.
Followed your heart.
And followed my heart. Broke up 2 weeks after I got there. So,
oh, hi, no.
Angela. Hi, Angela. Love you. She's married now. She's happy. But I worked at a children's hospital in Chicago, one of the best. We were top three ranked in the country at the time. And I came in as a young buck, you know, right out of school, zero experience. Decent student, but very, very curious and very much, I'll go, I'll do it. What are we doing? You know, very much I'm an all-in type, and was on this resource team, which meant I floated onto all the different floors in the hospital. So I became like a utility player, which was extra challenging and extra invigorating for me because I had to like, I was just dangerous enough to know enough to do everything. And then I had to go learn it. And then I got to, you know, find mentors in that space that were all really brilliant and some that were really helpful. And hopefully you find two in one. So anyway, spent that time being with kids that were suffering, and kids are, you know, almost always very innocent in whatever's happening. different than if you're like treating an adult that smoked cigarettes for 80 years and now they have lung cancer and welcome to what you planned, my friend. But with kids, you know, they're always innocent and they just want to play. And also the parents obviously are very involved. And so, and they're not sick, at least not sick physically. They're sick spiritually or emotionally or like, you know, all over the place. So getting to the opportunity to get to work in that environment, very intense environment. I was a pediatric intensive care. So kids are on the brink. There's a lot of pressure to make sure everything is done perfectly and you get ahead of issues and like that. But then also if you want to be, you know, as effective as I wanted to be, can I also create an environment in which great things happen? And that's like the relationships happen. And when the doctors come in, great things happen. When the parents are there talking, great things happen. And we're all moving right forward. That became quite the art of helping people befriend chaos and suffering, because there's no escaping it. And you can escape it by being angry or being crazy or like being, you know, usually the women were really controlling. And to their, I mean, and that's not a judgment. It's like, you know, if my kid's sick, we're going to get really clear right now about what's happening and who's in charge and why it's taking 25 minutes. It could take 15.
So they're kind of taking ownership and like getting right in there with it.
Well, yeah. And that's the best they, you know, when they're looking at the worst possible scenario for their life, like losing your child.
Yeah.
What's harder than that? There's nothing harder than that, I would say. Even losing a spouse is easier than losing a child. So. Yep. You know, when they're looking at that, they just, their brain's on the go. What do I do? Oh, I run this, you know? So moms did that. Usually guys got quiet and got angry. So anyway, those are the dynamics that would typically happen. I got to see that there's power in language. There's power in language, meaning that the brain is going to generate whatever perception it wants to generate. You don't really get a vote on that until you decide to tell it what to do, i.e. the mind.
Right.
But the brain's going to do its thing, and the brain is wired for survival and you know, fight or flight. It's going to be in that state, the hyper amygdala state. Like, you're not going to be logical. You're not going to be planning. You're going to be in fight or flight mode. And now that happens until somebody comes in and intervenes and invites people to look at what's happening in a specific way, which that would be a theme throughout my life, is helping people in the midst of chaos, take a look. So you're seeing it this way and it's generating this experience for you. And then out of that, all these thoughts and all these decisions and then all these actions and then all these results. Can we look at this a new way? You know, so not in a Pollyanna way.
And to be able to do that, right. And be able to do that when there's so much on the line, like life or death in that situation you're talking about in the hospital. And so I just want to pause for a minute and relate that into, you know, what most corporate jobs are like, right? It can feel like life and death emotionally and mentally, because we're having to make decisions and collaborate and do all of these things at breakneck speed now.
Yes.
With new tools, and our brain is receiving signals. Our nervous system is receiving signals that this is life or death. Is that fair to say?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's the brain's number one agenda, is to help us survive. Number one, we don't get a vote on that. That's gravity. Number two is save energy so we can survive later if we need to. That's what the brain's doing. Nobody gets to vote on that. That's gravity for the nervous system.
Yep.
So it's good to know that that's what's happening. Otherwise, we start to think, this is how I am. This is who I am. And if I can't make that distinction between what my brain's up to and what I'm up to, then we won't have much power and definitely not much versatility. And you just see options instead of seeing possibilities. So that's what I do for the listeners. That's what I do. If I jump a couple steps in my career path, that's what I do now. So I coach founders of companies, all very brilliant, very ambitious. It's on them, you know, some of them very, very successful. Some of them on the verge of success. Some of them, they come to me and, you know, Rome is burning. What do I do? They're in different places, but they're all is, I mean, the hue might be different, but it's all chaos, you know, and it's crisis. Even the crisis of success. I mean, if things are really working, you're still in crisis, because now you got to keep up. And now there's, you know, people are renegotiating. Some people are leaving. Some people are taking advantage of the situation. There's hyper political situation, whatever it is. It's all chaos. So I didn't answer your question well, though. But what have I learned? So,
well, no, you did. Tell me what else you've learned about leadership. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I did the nursing thing, and then I moved out to Los Angeles, and I worked at a church for that's about 3,000 people, and I would mobilize people to go serve in the city and take people overseas, especially when natural disasters would happen, like Katrina or Haiti, or you know when Pakistan was underwater. I took a doctor, and we went and did clinics. So taking people on these immersive experiences that will mark their life, hopefully in a really great way, almost always in a phenomenal, oh my gosh, that was, changed my life, to get to serve these people who you'll never know their names. They'll never know your name, but your life was transformed forever. Inviting people into philanthropic chaos, did that for a good while. After that, I ran a foundation, and we worked in the prison system, worked with murderers. So we ran leadership trainings in prison with murderers, and we ran these trainings. And then we trained these murderers, which were all lifers, some of them, most of them with the possibility of parole, to go then be change agents in the prison, because there's, they've been there for a long time.
Let's transfer that into the boardroom, or let's just into the corporate space.
Let's do
We're selling ourselves stories. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the theme is it through all of these is we get stuck in selling ourselves these stories. And I know when you and I spoke, I was telling you about my book, Trauma Informed Leadership, and you mentioned that people can use trauma as a convenient hiding place, and they're not doing it intentionally, or maybe they are when they're stuck in that victim mentality. But my question is more focused on how do you get leaders in your work to confront these hidden aspects and integrate these hidden aspects of themselves?
Yeah. So I always start with the future. That's where I start. I start with what they want. And when you invite anybody to talk about what they want, almost always surprising to me, I've been doing this a long time now. I've been doing this type of coaching for almost 15 years. It's almost not surprising to me now, but I ask really robust, smart, adventurous, ambitious leaders about what they want for the future. When I ask just two or three questions, they don't know. Like, they're not clear on what the future is. And these are all people that have slide decks everywhere about the future, but what do they want? What do you want to see happen? There's not a big vivid picture there. Now, why is that? Now, usually it's because they don't believe either in themselves. Most of these folks really believe in themselves, but they don't believe in their team, or they don't believe that the market's going to sustain or something like that. And so when you talk about the future, all their conversations about the present show up. And when you, right? So talk about all of their resistance, I would say, to that future being possible. Because even if they say, oh, we're going to make, 10 million next year. Great. Well, why not 20? I'll ask, why not? Okay, great, 10. But why not 20? Let's talk about that for a second. And that'll bring up all of their resistance, all the things that aren't quite working well, all the spaces in which they're stuck, or the team is stuck, or, big changes they would have to make in order to make that happen. And that's, now we've got a ball game, right? So now we've got all of the real conversation around current reality that needs to be explored. So sometimes if I try to go to your perspective and where you're coming from, almost always there's something that has happened in their past that the distinction I would make is X happened. What I made up about what happened actually becomes the memory. We know that's the way the memory works, right? So it's not like, we remember things in experiences, but we are the painters. The thing that happened is the canvas, and we paint meaning on it.
Right.
Whose fault it was, how hard it was, the impact of it, all that stuff. We paint a really great picture. It could be glorious. It could be horrible. Rarely do we entertain the idea that I can change the picture. I can change the painting. For the thing I said earlier, it's like hard to like say, I was blaming her for that divorce, but really I can see five or six reasons why it was me. And we rarely even just stop at that. Then we got to say, but her, whatever. We tend to try to self-justify just out of, I don't know, what people would call the ego, or just it's safer. It tells a better story. It, sells other people. But then we end up living this false life, I would say. I could be more specific about it, but we end up living this facade. We live a persona, and then we don't actually integrate ourselves. We don't fully own all the things that happened there. So we end up putting up this front so that it looks good. I mean, the survival needs are looking good, feeling good, being right, being in control, so that we look good to ourselves or other people, and we sell them on that. And then the thing with even all the really hard charging, brilliant leaders, they're massively insecure. Now, I think every human being is pretty insecure. I am.
I'd agree with you plenty of times.
Yep. Right? We're all insecure, but they've ended up building a whole life around their persona. And most of the time, what it'll take, I've got a dear friend going through a very hard time right now, and there's no way out but to actually look at all the conversations he's been historically unwilling to look at, which are things from his past, like the tragedy of losing his mother, the deadbeat, horrible person that his father was. All that would go in the trauma category. And how he's related to it is he's tried to outrun it. Right. Like most people. Like,
hey,
okay.
I've been there as well. And so, Adrian, do you find in the leadership world, I mean, you've taken these life experiences, you're creating some compelling work. And is it fair to say your work is more with men than it is with women?
Yeah. Not fully with men. I don't like only work with men, but I
But there's a masculine energy though that I'm sensing I want to be clear, like we need all types of work. This isn't just for like men or women to fix. We all need to work on this. And this is why I was really interested in our discussion, because it's more confronting than what you're talking about. It's more confronting, and it's not for everybody. I think
I'm not sure it's for everybody. I think I know what you mean. Like some people won't like it. And that's true.
Well, I think I'll tell you, there's different ways to get there. And depending on people's life stories, I think they need to have the agency to select how they're going to get there.
Right.
And if we're confronted when we're not ready to be confronted, like just our body hasn't, or if we haven't even accessed things about our past, that confronting is not going to work.
Maybe. I don't want to keep, you're going to keep going. Can we put that all in the maybe category? And let me just clarify a little bit.
Sure.
I'm giving you bullet points here, right? And I'm just kind of getting right to the point. If you saw me in a room, you know, we do this 4-day leadership training for anybody can come. It's public. And it's a deep conversation, and it's there's tears, and people are talking through the worst aspects of their lives, the worst decisions they've made, their biggest regrets, their biggest pain points. We do some family of origin stuff, and it gets really deep. And everybody, I think the soul is always dying for growth. You know, the brain wants what the brain wants, but the soul always wants some bit of progress, some bit of hope. You know, I think we're wired that way. So like they don't want to go look at it, but I'm just at least saying like in those situations, it's not like I'm standing up on a soapbox and say, get your shit together. And that's not it. That's we actually, for us, and Take New Ground, we come alongside of folks and let's just take a look at this with love and compassion, you know, and because it's hard and it's not.
And it's collective.
Right on.
I'm hearing here too that it's a collective journey, which again is another reminder, like how our brains are wired is to be in connection with each other instead of trying to figure out all this shit on our own.
Yeah. So I just wouldn't co-sign on it, that it's not for everybody. I know what you mean by that. I'm just saying that, yeah, a lot of people aren't going to take a leap in that context, but at least the first one to take a leap. But if you came to my training, you'd see somebody takes a leap and all of a sudden that has a cascading effect where somebody comes out of just being in the background, maybe just sitting in the, you know, we put people in an arc, they're just sitting there and they take a leap and start to share from a really awesome, vulnerable place that triggers so much openness with other people and people that they'll say things they haven't told anybody in 30 years. The thing they're most ashamed of, they'll say it. Now, why is that? Well, it's because they've seen, and we're not up there with a on a whiteboard teaching people shit. That's not my style.
Yeah.
We're sharing from my own life and my own mistakes and my own, you know, my own fraudulence and my, you know, as trainers, we're with them and we're not better than anybody, you know, whatever. We're in it too. So anyway, I would just watch it. I know what you mean and whatever, but everybody is dying for responsibility. Now it's really scary. And it goes goes in the face of culture, right? Because it's so normal for us to blame someone else for something. And someone else can be the causal agent of something that happened to me.
Right.
That's true. Like I could be hurt. I could be betrayed. I could be fill in the blank. It wasn't me. Now, if it does take guts to then take responsibility. Now you're saying this is a masculine thing. I don't think it is. To take responsibility for how I've used that over the years. That takes guts to do that. Most of the kind of natural therapeutic mindset won't go there because people don't like it. But I say there's freedom in that. Like freedom comes from taking personal ownership and personal responsibility. That is, I think, maybe naturally along the gender, like that is more of a masculine thing to do. Maybe challenge is more masculine and comfort is more feminine. But I try to do both simultaneously. And yeah, a lot of the female leaders I've worked with have been, go ahead.
It's an energy to me. It's not if you're masculine or feminine. It's just this notion of masculine energy is more controlling and goal oriented, and feminine energy is a little bit more flow and intuitive. We need both. That's
yeah.
all I'm saying.
And I'll say even just to that, maybe. I mean, I'm very, very intuitive. That's part of what makes me good at my job. Like listening yeah. to people deeply, finding patterns, wondering specifically. I'm really good at that. And I happen to be a dude. So I know what you're saying. You're talking in generalities.
And that's my point. Like you have, and you know, you're tapping into this, like the yin to your yang. That, yeah.
Right
so
on.
I would say like when you're tapping into that, that's exactly an example. I wish we actually had different names for it rather than feminine and masculine energy. Cause
yeah.
I think we can get caught up in that yep. sort of gendered piece. So this is intense work that you are calling in leaders to go on a journey with you about. Mm-hmm. Can you share maybe some examples with the listeners about some big transformations that you've seen in leadership and the impact that it has had on their team when they are willing to, you know, pull back the curtain and acknowledge some things about their past?
Yeah. One of my favorite people I've coached. I've been working with him for probably 4 years now. He ran a very successful public, I mean, everybody knows, would know his brand if I shared it. He created something that Elon Musk said was impossible. He made it happen. And mm-hmm. there was lots of, you know, when I came in, things were not going so well. And I came in and started working with him. He's the founder of the company and was the CTO at the time. And ended up coming through our work together, owning and becoming the CEO. There were certain conversations he was unwilling to have with his investors and his board, and that ruined the company. Now, while just like lots of people, if they're at that profile and spending that many hours a day, week, month doing that, his family life was horrible. It was
so
it was
like horrible. You're saying business conversations he was refusing to have with his board and his investors?
Yeah. He was okay. Not having some specific business conversations. There was some to keep out the details, but there was just issues yeah. going on. Trajectory was off. It was, you know,
right.
foreign
right.
money.
I just wanted to make sure that people weren't thinking that you thought he needed to come and bare his whole soul about his life. Like, and you weren't saying that. So that's all I was trying to clarify. Is
no,
there
no,
were business there, conversations there business, that he was yeah. avoiding.
Oh, 100%. Which, you know.
Got it.
We get clear about that and we can't make anybody do anything, but all the things right. we said, hey man, if you don't do this, listen, let's look at the future. If you keep up this cowardice, what's going to happen? What's right. going to happen? Let's entertain that future. Now, do you want that? No, I don't want that. Good. Well, then this is the conversation to have and blah, 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 blah. And I work with him to do it. I'm not that prescriptive, but I'm just telling it quickly for
yep.
the sake of the podcast. And he didn't do it. And it all fell apart. Now, meanwhile, his private life was falling apart. And so we got really involved and I got really involved in his private life and people on my team started coaching his family as his, and his wife's amazing. And there's lots of mischief. Anytime there's mischief on both sides of every breakdown,
yep.
both people are responsible. So we got that stuff to the surface and now he's launched a brand new company and he's doing this really grand endeavor of living this integrated life. Like, can I not sell out and not prostitute myself for the sake of a corporate vision? Can I actually be the husband I'm committed to being? Now that takes a lot of work to actually get her to the table. Cause if she's victim-y about it, that's not going to work either. That's just hyper codependent on the other side and the father that he wants to be. And even as he's starting this company, he's moving very slowly to do something he's never done before, which is to we never call it work-life balance. We talk about integration more, but to start this company and it's on its way, and if they kill it, they're in the defense space, AI defense space, it'll be a $1 billion company. If they do that, can I do that and still be the man, be the father that I'm committed to being at home? Now he has to buddy up to kind of to your question, all of the ways in which he will sell out and blame anything else, blame the necessity of entrepreneurship, or blame his wife and how she is, or blame the chaos of being a father, or blah, 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 or the board. And, you know, as he's coming and getting more investors now, all that spooky history is right there next to him. And he has to see it. We talk about it like every week, like, where are there ghosts in the room that you need to talk to? Because you don't just avoid them, because they're there. They're not there on accident. Your brain is bringing them back to try to protect you. Now, you can live a protected life, or you can live a courageous life. That's kind of binary. I mean, you can shift, of course, but you're not going to like do both. But I of course, go after living a courageous life. So when I am scared of the past traumas coming back, can I see what's happening? Can I see the conversation instead of just being that conversation? You know, because not like... There's a difference between I am scared and, oh, I know this conversation. I'm actually more scared that I'll betray again, that I'll give myself up for the sake of it. So he's a heroic guy. He and his wife just came through that Revenant process, and now he's like the best evangelist for it, because they came together in that room and dealt with all the conversations that are under the table. And most of our conversations about trauma, the real ones, means we'll offer the icing on the cake to people in public, but like the real ones, which is usually the complexity of it. Like that's where like the, what happened to me and what did I do to myself? Like, when did I self betray? I got betrayed, but when did I start self betraying? All that really juicy, scary responsibility. That's usually under the table, not explored with other people for fear of not looking good. In my own eyes or in their eyes, or what would happen if I took responsibility for me being betrayed. Most people won't get close to that. But in that room.
Or even understand it. Like, I didn't even understand what that meant for a long time. Like, what do you mean betrayed? Like, I'm fine. Move on. So where does this term, this concept, hugging the cactus, is that like, was hugging the cactus?
Well, it's right here. I mean, we are philosophically... We're grounded in what's called phenomenology, which is the study of becoming. And one of the best phenomenologists of all time was Carl Jung. And Carl was famous for his, what he called shadow work, which, you know, is the invitation that we're going to live. There's going to be aspects of ourselves that we are scared to death that are actually true. And the resistance of those conversations and those behaviors is actually what makes them more true. Mm-hmm. And we are imposters to ourselves, because we're not one person. We're several people inside one body. At least I know that for myself.
Like, there's lots of different identities.
There's lots of versions of Adrian, and some of them I like, some of them I don't like at all. And so the hugging the cactus thing is, first off, am I willing to look at my own dark side? You know, because we worked in prison system, we say all the time, like, we're all criminals, and some of us are just more arrestable than others. So we've all got darkness in us. We've all got inauthenticity in us. Even just who was it? Alan Watts that said, you know, we can never be authentic. The best we can be is authentic about our inauthenticity, so that we live inauthentic lives. We're just conflicted, right? Like, we'll say one thing and we won't really mean it, or we'll do this thing and we don't really mean it, or we'll give up on ourselves, or we'll people please and we're lying to ourselves, and then we'll end up blaming them for it later, or our mom or history or blah, blah, blah. But I've chosen to be unaware of those things, and I live this conflicted life. Like, so we are inauthentic I know I am all the time. I'm not saying what I mean. Or I'm not going all the way. I'm going 90% and pat myself on the back for it, but I'm not really willing to be truthful, which would take a lot more trust and courage in other people. Like, trusting human beings is the greatest endeavor for any human. It's like, am I willing to be vulnerable with another human being? So as we look at that, and we find ways in which we lie, ways in which we hold back, ways in which we withhold, ways in which we judge instead of be open, all those things, those are our dark sides. And I could go into 2 hours of this, of course, but that's the cactus. That's the thing. Like, how am I lying to myself? My own self-deception. And am I willing to not judge that, first off? because the worst thing to do is to judge it, because if I judge it, I won't get close to it. And usually there's gold in that conversation. Like, what is it? Oh, I never remember his name. Foster. Who's the guy that did The Hero's Journey? Anyway, the treasure you most seek.
Oh, Joseph Campbell.
Thank you. Campbell said, the treasure you most seek is in the cave you dare not enter.
You don't want to go in. Yeah.
Right on. So that's hugging the cactus. Can I look at these things that I'm scared to death are true and just befriend them? Can I get close to them? I'm a very influential guy. I don't mean like on Instagram. I know how to influence people. I've been doing this a long time and I'm good at it. Now, I can also manipulate people. I can take myself and take other people to a wrong place for my own selfish means. I've got stories upon stories about how I've done that. Some ignorantly, some not ignorantly. Now, I know that about myself, that I've got that type of skill set or power. And I don't say that. I say that with humility here, just saying I need to befriend that. Like if the evil intentions, when I'm in something just for myself and not in it for the other person, I need to not run from that conversation, but behold it and sit with it and even hug that. Like, how am I a liar?
Yeah.
And that's hugging the cactus.
How do you, maybe if you were just sort of to generally look at, is there something that happens in somebody's life that allows them to hug the cactus or to not be afraid of the cactus? Like, is there an event that somebody goes through and it's like, holy shit, like, okay, I got to do something about this? Or can we influence people to hug the cactus even when they don't want to?
Okay. A few questions there. Well, proverbially, you know, rock bottom usually helps people, you know,
so whenever something hard has happened.
Consequences have come, you know, rent's due on all the bad decision, and consequences come, and it's kind of that, oh crap moment, and you can't run from it, and there's no escaping it, and you can't keep justifying it or can't outrun it with money or time or, you know, move to another city or start new friends or whatever. And sometimes it's just all in your face. I was in a conversation like that this morning with a friend of mine, and I just said, just stay right here, man. You're doing great. It's horrible. It's bad. And it's always been this bad, by the way. It's just right in your face right now. No, don't run from this. You get close to it. Get close to it. And just, you need to believe that you aren't, like, if you choose to die to yourself, you won't actually die. If you don't choose to die to yourself, then you'll die faster physically. It's kind of this, you know, there's every great religion's got that theme running through it, like suffer really well. And what we're talking about is suffering. So the second question I think was, can we expedite that process for people? Yeah. That's why I talk about the future, because when I ask people about what's happening and what they're doing and whose fault it is, people want to talk about fault all the time instead of contribution, but I want them to talk about what's generating this crappy situation you're in now. And if you don't do anything new, how bad's it going to be? And we get really clear with hypercolor of the future that's coming. If I make no courageous decision today, what is coming? And that sometimes will shake people out of their despair. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll shake them out of their, you know, apathy. And just, you know, their victim stance of like, oh, it just is what it is now. Just got to wait. Like, I don't know if it's that way. I mean, I know it's not that way. I mean, anybody can step up and make a courageous choice. Their price is to be paid for that. So that's the best version I know about how to do it.
Right.
Because we are mammalian and we're always very intentional beings, always. And people are smart. And people, while we want to protect ourselves, we really don't want to die.
Yeah.
So,
it's really, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but there needs to be modeling in that as well. Like if they can hear a story, if I can share something from my own life, which I do freely in my work with people, just to say, hey, this, I've been there, man. Listen, let me tell you this story about what that was happening. And then all of a sudden one day I said, F it. You know what? I don't care what happens. I'm going to live with integrity. And I'm going to tell the truth to myself first and then tell the truth to other people. And it was a roll of the dice because you don't know. And I have plenty of stories where I was honest after I'd blown something and people ran for the hills. And that's human.
Yep.
It's not great, but it's human. We all want somebody to befriend us in our worst moments. So when we evacuate someone, when they're actually honest about their criminality, that's hypocritical of us, but we're all that way at times. But if they we don't tell these stories in public very often about how someone blew it and then they took deep responsibility. That's why in the press, when somebody, especially in the political sphere or whatever, you know, like we don't forgive anybody. Like forgiveness is a forgotten art in our culture. We're dying for it. It takes courage to forgive somebody because you have to pay attention now. You were not paying attention before. Now you have to pay attention to be in a relationship with them because you know what they're capable of. But the more people are taking responsibility for their own criminality, the more they aren't offended by someone else's. I know that for me.
Well,
like when someone's lying to me, I get it.
I think to forgive, we have to have already hugged the cactus. I think people who can forgive at that deep level have hugged the cactus. And
right on.
Yeah. Great. Adrian, can you tell us a little bit more? This is fascinating. I'm really grateful that you've come on and shared this approach, your insight. I really do believe that this work and collective healing that we're trying to bring into the world, there are different ways to do it. And so I know we didn't always like see exactly the same on things, but
sure.
I think fundamentally though we have agreement and our approaches might be a little different. And like I said, I'm really happy that you came on to talk about it because it sounds like you are doing some amazing work with people to help them. I love this term, hug the cactus.
Yeah.
Where could people find out more about this work that you're doing?
Yeah. Just to do a second on that. Yeah. We have different approaches, which is cool. I think it's beautiful. I mean, we need different approaches because to your point earlier, depending on where someone is in their own journey or what's at stake for them, you know, usually people come to me when it's on fire and my approach is helpful in that context because it's about results and it's about, you know, rigorous thinking and it's not about comfort. It's about you better turn this ship around tomorrow. Like you got to go have that tough conversation today. I would invite you not to care how you feel about it right now. You can feel about it later. Now it's all about taking appropriate action. But at different times, you know, so deep honor for you and your approach and it's beautiful. And it is essential if everything, I mean, in general, if we all did this where we could respect other people's opinions and how we got to them. And I see so much virtue. I don't know a ton because I'm not interviewing you on this podcast about your approach, but I can feel how you stand with people. And as long as you're fiercely committed to people and will tell the truth to them, that's great.
Yep.
I'm in.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, so our firm is called Take New Ground. So we work with these fast moving founders and fast growing companies. And we do everything from like coaching work and do offsites. And we've got a consulting arm and we, you know, have 7 companies in our portfolio that we have equity in. And we come in and do some heavier work and bring in some MBA type thinkers to come, you know, run the nuts and bolts. But most of our work is around culture and it's around leadership. And we love that work. We've got a podcast ourselves called the Naked Leadership Podcast, where we talk about kind of the underbelly of issues and the thinking behind all the things. So it's not like a 5 steps to blah, blah, blah. Like there's lots of podcasts. Right. Go listen to those or YouTube that all day long. That's great. We want to get to the human experience behind it. The real, the naked side of leadership.
Right.
If we're leading well, we will feel vulnerable. If we're leading well, if we're not leading well, we're probably going to feel all certain and tons of momentum all the time, but you're avoiding things that are going to come back and eat your lunch later. We want to eat that. We want to take those issues on now so that they stay at a 2 out of 10 and not get to a 10 out of 10 in a breakdown. So that's the Naked Leadership Podcast. And I was talking earlier about this 4-day experience. That's called the Revenant process. The Revenant meaning to come back from. That's on wearerevenant.com, or they can find me on Instagram, adrian.k. If you got any questions, I'll point you that direction. It is not for the faint of heart. People come in because they're dying for something new in their life, or they've got something they've been tolerating for a long time, or something they can't escape, or something maybe they're coming back from a really hard season of their life. And this is all about personal leadership. How do you lead yourself? How do you know yourself? And how do you get a hold of the conversations, usually the ones that are under the table or behind the scenes, that are running the show? Because a lot of life just seems to happen. But I'm saying that that's not the way it is. That's just the way it occurs to us, that things happen, people happen. But if we can get a hold of the conversational, the reality happens in a conversation. Like it's all what we call it thinking, but there's like the, you know, there's all that. Now, can I illuminate that in a safe environment with no judgment at all? We have zero judgment. We just, hey, let's just talk about it. Let's explore all of it. Like there's no conversation too dangerous for us or too ugly for us or too, there's no shame in our room either. People feel shame and they act all shameful. We invite them out of that. Can we just talk about it and stop playing the shame game, which is a hiding place, not a feeling? So if people are interested in that, we've got one coming up in April in Los Angeles, where I'm from. And it's great. It's like 40 people in the room, and they're all ambitious people, all leaders for the most part. Everybody's leading in industry or leading their own company. And so it's people that are leveraged, you know, and they come there, they come in life, like they, you know, either they're leading a family, or they're leading a team, or they're leading a whole business. They do know that if they make a shift, it's going to shift everything. That's the beauty of it.
Right.
So, we're all blind, right? We don't see, we have blind spots. Things that are invisible to us. You know, we always say that you can't really do surgery on yourself. So we need other people to be mirrors for us in this process of self-discovery. So people come out of there with new best friends and new lifelong partners.
It's a big collective experience. Yeah, I can imagine.
4 days.
So
10-hour days. It's amazing.
And so they can find that on your website then?
They can. Hopefully by the time this posts, we're going to actually integrate it into our Take New Ground website, but it's actually a separate website right now called wearerevenant.com. But if they find me on Instagram, adrian.k, if you say hi to me, I'll send you any information you need.
All right. Well, we'll make sure those links are in the show notes as well. Adrian, do you have time for three more questions that I ask all my guests?
Let's do it.
All right. So one question I have, and this is in the spirit of encouraging self-awareness, and you've gone a lot of places with that today. Maybe just a sentence or two about something you learned about yourself that really helped you take your self-awareness to a new level.
Oh, wow. Sentence or two of something I've learned about myself that took my self-awareness to a whole new level. Wow. I'll just give an example from this morning. As a default setting of mine, I tend to people please. I tend to put myself at the bottom of the list. And that works. Like, people love that, right? When you're around them and you prioritize them, they love that. But then I end up living in lots of anxiety and lots of fear and lots of resentment. And, you know, I'm just learning that more and more and more about how I do that unconsciously. And I think, you know, I grew up in a Christian background, service is a big deal. Servant leadership is a big deal. Sacrificing for someone else is a big deal. It's only really sacrifice, though, if it comes from a place of authenticity and I'm actually being real with myself. So, you know, I think the answer to your question probably is, if I ask myself the question, like, hold on, what do I really want in this moment? And that answer to that doesn't have to be what happens either, but I ought to get clear about what my interests are. Because if I don't know what they are, I'll just have a life that other people shape, or the team shape, or society
just
shape.
Follow along.
And then I'll end up waking up miserable. And I've done that in different seasons of my life. But, you know, then I can actually fight for the both and, you know, both my needs and that other person's needs can get met at the same time. It's not some zero sum game. So that's a little more than one line. Yeah. But anyway, that theme is wonderful. Very, very present for me.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm curious if there is a routine or a ritual that you really enjoy and rely on to help you stay calm and centered.
Yeah. It has come and gone. I'm back into doing it, but journaling early in the morning is a big gift to myself. You know, I did it as a kid. I did it in college. Then I didn't do it for a long time. And on and off is like, I'm 43 now, on and off. But I even just this last weekend, I was with my team and my team was asking me, what do I really love? And I just, that's like me sitting down, and I'm a nerd. So I've got a journal and a fountain pen. I like writing with fountain pens. So I don't just sit and type stuff up, but there's something romantic about it where it's I think the beauty of it for me is I get to see where I am. Like how am I really doing? That's a question I haven't asked myself enough in my life. Because I'll just drive. Yep. I'll just go and get stuff done. And sometimes out of obligation, sometimes out of fear, sometimes sometimes out of passion. But I don't like give myself the space to like, how am I really doing? You know, I threw my back out yesterday, woke up with a horrible, sometimes it'll happen for me. And it just hits me. It's like, I live a very fast paced life. That's very demanding on purpose. Like, I do that on purpose and I like it that way. But, you know, we were talking before we started recording, as you're asking how my week's been, I've got four really close friends to me that are going through some deep crisis. And I'm a guy that talks to them, all four, every day.
Yep.
That's a lot of stress. And I'm happy to do it, but I'm carrying that a little bit. I try not to like make their crisis be my crisis, but I love them and I'm connected and I'm concerned about them. And so point being is like giving myself freedom to like see how I'm doing. And then certain things, it's just to be with that, you know, like the stress isn't going to go away because of what I've signed up for. And I don't have to, I thought about it yesterday. I don't have to be, you know, I said to myself in the shower, it's like, I'm under a lot of stress. And I'm like, ah, the preposition is the challenge.
Right.
That
right.
I'm under this stress. It's on top of me. What if I got next to my stress? That would open up a whole new world. I could look at it. What's actually going on here? What do I have control over? Where do I have choice that I've not taken choice? And where can I maybe be more honest or be more anyway? So being next to my stress helps me instead of being under my stress, and journaling helps
and writing it. Yeah. Thank you. And then the final question is about music. And so if you could share with us a song or genre of music that helps you feel connected to something bigger than yourself.
Wow. I love music. The last few months, I've really gotten into a genre that I hadn't before, which is kind of this like singer, songwriter, country genre.
Okay. What would be an example of an artist?
Sure. A couple guys come to mind. One, this guy named Zach Bryan, who's taken the world by storm. I don't know if people don't know Zach Bryan. He's, you know, he had 9 out of 10 slots on the Billboard. His last album took 9 out of 10 slots. That never happens. And he's a poet. You know, he's like an ex-military guy, country guy, but he's a poet, and he writes from a very deep spot. And like he talks about, it's not like poppy, stupid country. It's like actually soul.
Yeah.
You know, soul meets country. And Zach Bryan, or this guy named Tyler Childress. There's a handful of these songs that just are just really honest. They're really honest about the human experience, not just catchy and poppy. I've always been drawn towards like Ray Charles would be one of my favorite artists of all time, or Joe Cocker and those guys. That genre is like my genre. So I used to have a playlist on my iPod. Remember those?
Oh, I do.
That was called Gut Tunes. Gut tune. So
yeah, like that deep, let's get in there and get that emotion.
Yeah.
Well, Adrian, thank you so much. As we said at the beginning, we went deep on this one, didn't we?
Yeah. And just more to come. Thank you for having me on. If there's anybody that's listening that wants to just have a exploratory conversation, I'm here for you. And if you just reach out to me, and love to make some time.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Adrian, again, for coming on the show, and hopefully our paths will cross again.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Ooh, that was a fun conversation with Adrian. Wow, he's doing some amazing work. He's got this incredible background. And I'm at the point now with confidence in myself and also with the podcast where I like to have people onto the show who might not be doing the work the exact same way that I'm doing it, but their integrity and their intent is coming from a similar place. And so I hope that's what you heard in my conversation with Adrian today. The approach that he takes to helping leaders find deeper pieces of themselves, you heard some of the remarkable success that he's had with it. And his approach isn't going to fit for everybody. My approach is not going to fit for everybody. The invitation that I'm extending to you on this podcast is to find an approach and find a way that works for you, that helps you get to know yourself. There are pieces of ourselves that we have hidden that we don't even have access to. And if you are leading people, especially if you are leading large organizations or large teams of people, you will be impacting them. And if there are pieces of yourself that you don't know or you're not willing to know, you are going to inflict unintentional difficulty, and I'll even say harm. And so that's the invitation out of this podcast, is to find a group, a person, people, an organization that will help support you on your own journey to understand yourself. Thanks as always for tuning in, and I'd love to hear what you think about this episode. Also, please feel free to share it with friends and colleagues, and I'd love it if you could rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps out this podcast and to increase our reach. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you on our next episode.